Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Keep this frequency clear.
Here we go!
Are you ready?
Coming at ya! Welcome to another edition of Amp Radio, another MMA podcast. We're coming at you live and unedited from the mean streets of San Mateo, California, Brantford, Ontario. Proteus, of course, making his appearance and his appearance well known in at UFC 206. Before we go into this, Pro, guys, you know, listen, I think it's fair to call this show, Proteus, this week in MMA, a lot to cover, obviously. And today, by the way, we're going to have a co-host for most of the show will be Kel Dansby of The Corner. And we follow him at Kel, K-E-L, Dansby, D-A-N-S-B-Y. Kel is a journalist for Black Sports Online and half of the broadcasting tag team champions, The Corner, with Andreas Hale. So that'll be pretty exciting there, Proteus. And listen, before we introduce our co-host, the man who's always with me, let's play a little bit about on his appearance with at UFC 206 with Anthony Rumble Johnson and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
Rumble says you get to go, sir.
Go for it, bro. Go for it.
Let's do it.
But thank you still.
Ask away.
Right on, right on.
I hope they're good.
I am good. They're very good. Hey, guys, thank you very much for leaving your very warm and sunshiny climates for coming to our beautiful country where it's snowing and it's cold as.
Hey, it's a good change. You know what I mean? Good change.
And you welcome it very well. Guys, I'm just wondering, both of you are kind of in the same position where you're kind of waiting for the next fight. What does that do to your mental as a fighter that wants to continue to fight frequently? What does that do to your head? Is it easy to get through or not so much?
For me, it just gives me, it lets my brain slow down and kind of just calm down and not worry about anything. Because once I'm in fight camp, I'm a crazy man then. Just leave me alone and let me train and let me fight, let me spar, let me do whatever I got to do to make sure I beat the guy that's going to try and beat me up. So whenever I don't have a fight or, the fight gets canceled, I sit back and I relax and I just enjoy myself. I live life a lot more than...
Kind of the same, man. And, going through camps and, we're fighters, so our bodies take a lot of abuse. If you saw my last fight, I was pretty banged up. So I use that time to heal up, give you a chance the body just kind of relax and heal up from previous injuries that you've had. And that's what we do, man.
Perfect. Thank you.
We go to the man that sported our Amp Radio T, the one and only, my partner in crime, Prados.
Good morning, Tony. Yeah, that was definitely an experience, man. That was definitely cool.
Following you on Twitter that night, boy, you were active. I mean, you were everywhere. Luckily for you, of course, you got to see the lovely Ariane and, of course, Brittany Palmer as well at the weigh-ins. Mm-hmm. Have you been to multiple weigh-ins or was that your first weigh-in?
No, yeah, that was my first weigh-in. That was my first Q&A. It was, like I said, a cool experience. I have never left my belongings unattended so much as I did on Friday. Hilarious. But everybody there was cool. I asked the guy beside me, "Can you just watch my stuff, dude?" And he was like, "Yeah, sure." Took a couple of pictures of me asking the question. It was really neat to just get in a room with like-minded individuals.
So let's go into the couple days that literally was for you at UFC 206. You obviously had the sure. MMA meetup. You were with other journalists, etc. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So basically after work on Friday, I jetted from my home and took the train up to Toronto. Arrived just about 1:30, 2 o'clock, got checked into the hotel, took a shower, and then wanted to go and drop a care package off for our boy cold coffee. And it just so happened that Josh from Tilsonburg was also staying at the host hotel. So I was like, dude, why don't we meet up? I'm coming by to drop off a care package for cold coffee. And he's like, yeah, sure, man. Come on up whenever you get here. So I drop off the care package for your boy, cold coffee. And I headed up to see Josh and his friend, Andy. And two cool guys, man. You know, had a quick beer with them, quick frosty beverage with them. And they just wanted to go to the weigh-in. And I was like, well, I got to get down to the Q&A because I want to ask a question, right? Want to sport that Amp Radio t-shirt on the state-run TV. That's what I'm talking about. Yep, absolutely. So I actually sprinted from the host hotel to the weigh-ins or the Q&A. Yeah, because it was just after 3. The Q&A started at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So I sprinted from the hotel to the Q&A. I got there in time, dropped my stuff off, like I said, and then went to go stand in line. And there was a few guys ahead of me, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I'm just waiting patiently and getting closer and closer. And I'm one guy behind, and Goldie says, okay, we're only taking two more. So one from the side that I was on and one from the other side, and then the Q&A was over. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'll just stay in the background here, try and get that Amp shirt on state-run TV while I'm in the background. Right? Try to look as inconspicuous as possible. Didn't do that at all. And then they were about to shut it down. They're playing the music, and Rumble points over at me, and Goldie says, you guys heard the audio, you know? And I was just standing around there just in case something happened, you know, maybe they extended it, or maybe I could get the shirt on TV a little bit more. And then Rumble calls me out, and I was like, shoot, I was only half paying attention because I wasn't expecting to get on. And I threw down my question, and they were both really nice to me. It was really cool. And then they shut it down, and they set up for the weigh-ins. And by that time, Josh and Andy had arrived, and they had saved me a seat nice and close. And I don't know if anybody noticed, but Chasm pointed out that we made it onto the embedded, the last embedded, which was super 601. Cool as well. If you look real closely, yeah, 601, real quick. You can see my gigantic nose sticking out. That's me.
Thank you, dummies.
Cool. The weigh-ins were awesome. And like you said, Tony, I wanted to make sure that I had some content from the weigh-ins. So I basically recorded snippets of everybody walking in because I wasn't on Wi-Fi. I was using my data, so I didn't want to run out. Got that done. So from there, after the weigh-ins, the weigh-ins were super cool, by the way, as well. If you ever get a chance to go down to a weigh-ins, Tony or anybody listening, it's free, and it's cool, man. It was a cool vibe. So then from there, we packed up and headed back to Josh's room, and we had a really nice conversation. You know, we sit here, Tony, every week, and we do this show, me and you, or me and you and a co-host, and whomever it may be. And we don't really get to talk to the people that are listening. And we know that people are listening, right, Tony? We see the numbers and we know that people are listening. But it was really, really cool to actually meet some people that are listening to AMP. They're fans of us. They enjoy listening to the program. Like Josh and I just were spitting back and forth about things that went on in the show and, you know, in the past and cool things that had happened. And it was really neat for me to just kind of get some kind of gratification, you know what I mean, Tony? You do in this hard work and you don't know, you know, you don't really meet anybody. You don't really talk to anybody. So it was really neat to get that. And then Chasm showed up, met Matt Brown, Zach McCoskey. Yeah. I mean, Chasm is a picture whore, if you excuse my language. He loves getting pictures with the fighters. You know, one minute you're talking to him and then boom, he's Batgirl, he's out of there, he's getting a picture real quick with a fighter. And real cool guy. Also came back up to the room with Josh's room and sat around for another, you know, couple of hours, and the time just flew, Tony. I mean, the time just flew. Before we knew it, was time to head over to the MMA meetup. And by that time my buddy had arrived, and we went back to our hotel, got ready to go out, hit up the MMA meetup. And I walk in, And James Lynch looks at me and he's like squinting and he's like, Proteus? I'm like, yes, James Lynch, I'm Proteus. So that was really neat to get, you know, kind of known who I am. I mean, I have been pushing the meetup. And
keep in mind, you're 6'4".
Morning. Yeah. Yeah. I'm hard to miss, right?
Right.
Anyways, that was super cool. And you know what? He took me around the room, introduced me to everybody. Of course, I knew who everybody was because I followed them all on Twitter and, you know, listened to their podcasts and et cetera. And Robin Black showed up. That was pretty cool. He was there.
Sweet.
Hung out with us all night. Yeah, really neat guy. I got a little starstruck because Robin Black, I don't know if anybody knows, he was my rock star when I was coming up.
Was so he?
He has his own band. He had his own band, Robin Black and the Intergalactic Rock Stars. Look him up if you want.
He looks like a rock star though, right? With the dyed black hair. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hilarious though. So I ended up getting a little starstruck and he's talking with somebody else in another conversation and I'm just standing there staring at him and he turns over to me and I went, oh man, I guess I just got caught staring. Eh? That's kind of lame move on my part. Anyways, he was super cool about it. That whole night, man, just was a blur. It went by so fast. Just so many conversations and guys giving me advice about how to grow the podcast, how to get into media coverage, et cetera, et cetera. Really cool. And one thing that I was really proud of, Tony, I actually got Callie, Chasm, Josh, James Lynch, and Josh's friend, Andy. We did a round table around the table. I had my microphone with me. Yeah, but you know what? Guess what, Tony? The only thing is, right now, it sounds like we might have an hour and 45 minutes of static.
Oh, no. Yeah, I can't find that drop. Damn. We were just going over.
I don't know.
Yeah, we were just working on the drops, and guess what? We dropped the bomb on that one. No pun intended, right?
Yeah. And it would have been so good, Tony, because, you know, Gally and Chasm, they like to be the behind-the-scenes kind of guys and not really call in or, you know, anything like that. But Gally, super cool guy as well, really down to earth. It was really good to meet up with some junkies. I'm glad that some junkies did show up so that I could, for the first time, meet some other junkies besides Josh. And you know what, guys? We had a really, really good time. I couldn't tell you what happened in most of the fights on UFC Albany because there was just too much going on. You know? Just great. I mean, Jim is a super, really cool guy. I couldn't say much more about everybody that was there, from James to and meeting Cold Coffee after the I forgot this part, after the weigh-ins or in between the weigh-ins and the Q&A, I went over and introduced myself to Cold Coffee, shook his hand, really nice guy, but seemed really, really busy. We didn't see him come out to the event at all. But yeah, as I was saying, Jim Edwards, super cool guy. We've had him on the show. Really, really cool guy of, you know, Full Combat. And who else? Oh, Matthew Wells was there. Super cool guy. Both of them, I kind of...
Nice. I like that guy.
I just kind of... Yeah, he's really cool. He said he would love to do the show at some point. And James said that he's available to do the show.
James is great.
As well. So James is awesome. Yeah, really cool. And it was funny because I kind of broke off and we did the round table. And James comes running over. He's like, are you guys podcasting right now? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. He's like, he sat right down, got into the conversation. He's like, what are you guys talking about? Let's go. Oh, man, hopefully I can recover the audio, guys.
He's such a hard worker, too. Yeah.
You know what? That's what he was saying. He said he got up early in the morning, went to the early weigh-ins, had to go home, do his regular job, cover the Q&A and the weigh-ins after that, then straight to the meetup. What a dude, man. I mean, like I said on the show with him, I'm like, when do you sleep? When do you sleep? Apparently naps. Naps are good. He told us again, naps are good. So,
and we
really, really
and we will
night.
Take all advice, right, bro?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Before I knew it, it was the end of the night. Everybody was clearing out, and I had realized I hadn't had anything to eat yet. That's how excited I was. I went from breakfast all the way to 1 o'clock in the morning without eating because it was just so exciting. And that's another note. Service in Toronto, terrible. I don't think I tipped anybody because they were so grouchy and mean. I was like, ugh, this is terrible. Anyways, so that was my night. And then, of course, the next morning I had to leave. Unfortunately, my wife thought there was an emergency with one of our children, so I posseed out home. But
thank
overall,
God everything's
guys,
okay, right?
Excellent.
Everything's okay at home?
Yeah, everything's fine. Yeah, it was false alarm. Everything was good, but I did have to leave. I'm sure my friend was a little bit upset that I left him at 6 o'clock in the morning, still laying in the hotel. But I had to go, you know, family first, right, Tony?
Family's always first. I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's all we have. You know, the great part is, man, you were so active in everything and in of course, meeting people. I think the one thing that we forget, Pro, is, you know, and I think Sam, you know, Sam All Jam, shout out to Sam, shout out to everyone, right? That's ever been a part of the show. The one thing we forget is we think we're like in a little bubble, Pro. It's just you and I and you know, and the AM team, of course, but we forget that people may kind of know who we are, certainly not by face because we have faces for radio, right? But
exactly.
You know, it's funny, right? You're wearing that t-shirt and then people are like, hey, where can I get them? Hey, are you guys AMP Radio? And you know, listen, we're gonna go on our second round of tees. So we definitely have tees, and we're gonna send out obviously some tees to Canada. But we're thankful and grateful that they embrace us and that we're part of the community.
That's one thing that all the guys said to me. They said, "Dude, where can we get a shirt?" And I would have given the shirt off of my back to Josh had it not been freezing cold. but yeah, super. There's definitely some interest in the shirts, Tony. So maybe we should look into getting them online, selling them.
Without a doubt, and maybe we get our guy Chase from Tough Prints, right, to help us out a bit. We'll definitely use whatever resource that we have. Hey, listen, in about 2 minutes, we're going to have Kel online, and then we'll go into the fights, et cetera. We'll do a little bit of interview with him. I'm actually looking up Robin Black right now. And, you know, again, he does look, he reminds me a little bit. Do you remember that you may be a little too young for this? Ricky from MTV, what was his name? You might be a little too young for this. There was a guy.
Well, keep in mind that we don't have MTV up here either. We have
really
music. Correct.
Do you guys at least get to play music videos? Because MTV sure doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I think you can get MTV on cable packages now, but back in the day, we couldn't. We can only get much music. And yes, they played a lot of music videos, which I'm sure they don't do anymore.
Darn. Well, so much for that. But here's a drop that we were missing. So let's hope that we get to recover that without a doubt. Hold on, I was late on that
Sunny
drop,
LA,
right?
I just don't give a fuck.
All right, now let's talk a little bit about this. Anyone that surprised you at the weigh-ins with either the way they looked? I'm assuming at the time that you were there, you already knew that Pettis had missed weight, right, bro?
Yeah. Yeah, and the fans were super harsh on him. And Calvin Gastelum too, actually. Even though Calvin
deservedly so, right?
Made weight. Yeah. Even though he made weight, people were still yelling fatty at him and all kinds of stuff. It was the kind of a mob mentality when those two guys came out. But Max Holloway held it down all week. You know, I could see him with the interviews at a media day, and he came out with confidence that was second to none. Cub Swanson, when he came up to the scale, he was looking super, super focused and confident about being ready to fight, you know, and geez, did they ever bring it? But we'll get into that later, right, Tony?
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, I know that you were talking about Max Holloway, and shout out to Max Holloway, right?
Absolutely.
Sorry, I get a kick out of that. But yeah, I'm not surprised at all. I should have played that drop. You know what? Let's call. Let's call Cal right now. Boy, my tongue is completely tied here. And you know what's funny?
You're recovering.
You know what? I actually went on a run. Well, how about this? I tried to go on a run because I'm on antibiotics. For those that don't know, I had walking pneumonia, right? So I'm on antibiotics. I recovered pretty quickly, though. I'm not going to lie. Probably the second or the third day, I was pretty good. I was pretty good last night. But I'll tell you that it's just by the way, shout out to the I know everyone's anti-medicine, but shout out to antibiotics because good Lord.
Absolutely.
I mean,
still need them for, right, Tony?
Oh, I need them, bro. I mean, good Lord.
Yeah.
Guys, let's go into today's guest, the co-host, of course, of The Corner with Andreas Hale. And let's, of course, not to mention, of course, Kel is a journalist for Black Sports Online and half of the podcast Tag Team Champions, Kel. That's right. Champs. The one and only.
Yes.
Kel Dansby.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. It's great to join you.
You knew I threw your walkout song on for you. You know that, right?
Well, yeah, the entrance music. I'm feeling majestic right now, like I'm walking to the octagon.
Kel, you are a champ. And Kel, so I have, of course, my colleague, my tag team. If you're tag team champions of the world, we are U.S. tag team champions. And shout out
that's
for
right.
those that remember.
You guys should be SmackDown brand. Yeah, it's a brand.
That's
split.
Right. That's no right. Problem. Yeah, shout out to those that still remember WCW. So Proteus, yeah. Kel Proteus.
Hey, nice to meet you, sir. Thank you guys for having me on.
Kel, actually, we've been dying to have you on for quite some time. So if for those that may not know, obviously, Kel does a lot of coverage. Your podcast, by the way, is really fantastic. The Corner. The one thing I dig about your podcast, Kel, is that you're not strictly MMA and not, you know, Proteus and some of the others get on me for not listening to a lot of MMA podcast because I think a lot of them are boring, to be honest with you. I think I like more personality based podcasts. You're one of those. You go into a lot of things. So let's go into Kel Dansby because first, before we get into the fights, I want to get to know a little about you and obviously shout out to Lerone for putting us in touch with your podcast. But how'd you get into MMA, Kel?
Wow. I got my job at Black Sports Online 4 years ago. I was just looking for a switch. I was in Kansas City going to school. I was in radio, sports radio mainly, and I had just a simple internship with the New York Giants. SNY in New York was my internship just to kill time. And the Giants ended up going to the Super Bowl that year. And I covered the Super Bowl for SNY as an intern. It was in Indianapolis, and Kansas City was just super close, so I just made the drive. So I ended up covering the Super Bowl. I did like Super Bowl week stuff. And then I watched the Super Bowl from like a cool bar in Indy. And then that kind of just gave me traction as a journalist. I wrote a couple articles. And yeah, that led to my job at Black Sports Online. But they were only looking for a West Coast contributor. And I had gone to high school in Vegas. I'm originally from New York. So they wanted a person in LA. And I was just like, well, I'm not an LA type of person. Like, I'm a New York person. You can only be like one or the other. So I was like, all right, you know, I've lived in Vegas. Can I live there? And then, you know, if there's stuff in LA, commute. They're like, yeah, sure. So I got the job at BSO and then moved back to Vegas. And from there, it was just like, okay, what's here? I wanted to cover events. That's always been my thing, covering live events. And I love doing interviews and so on and so forth. So it just so happened that MMA and boxing were the biggest things here in Vegas. And I've always been a boxing fan. My grandmother raised me on boxing, and we had like the illegal cable box growing up. It's all right. Statute of limitations. Cablevision can't come and get us. But we had that, and that's pay-per-view. And that's how I'm a wrestling fan as well. So I got all that stuff for free growing up. So, I mean, I was raised on boxing. So MMA was completely new to me 4 years ago. And I just dove headfirst into it, and I embraced it just like I did boxing. My first event ever was Manny Pacquiao versus Marquez when Pacquiao got floored and knocked out. So that was like my first boxing event that I covered for Black Sports Online. That was 4 years ago, almost to the day. So that was exciting. And then, yeah, I just went full force into it. I had a lot of research to do, and I went back, and that's also a key. I went back and learned a lot about MMA. I didn't just say, okay, well, I'm here now, and I know what I know from here on out. There's stuff like UFC Fight Pass and YouTube, and I went back and I caught up on all the years that I missed, and next thing you know, the ball kind of started rolling. I met great people like Andreas Hale and other journalists who have been covering it for 10 years. And just that wealth of knowledge kind of just got me going in the sport and to where I am today.
So, Kyle, tell us a little bit, for people who aren't familiar with Black Sports Online, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about the website and what they're all about?
Definitely. Well, Black Sports Online has been around, I guess, 10 years now. Robert Littell is the owner and main editor at Black Sports Online. He created it just to give a different voice to sports, a voice where he thought, you know, people get it. At the time, they got it on television. And there was stuff like Cold Pizza at the time, which turned into First Take and everything. But as far as journalism was concerned, there was no gap to bridge it. It was either you were a blog or you were a hardcore main, I guess, publication and website. And there was no middle ground at that time. And he started doing the stuff like, okay, you know, memes. When that came out, we were one of the sites to start posting memes and all this stuff. And then now the stuff you see Bleacher Report doing, Yahoo doing, all these things were stuff that Black Sports Online was built off of. So thankfully we still have the same traction. We're one of the only independent sites that actually cover live events. You look at even sites like Deadspin, who've been bought out since, but sites like that, they don't really cover live events. We're one of the only ones, so that's great. It allows me to cover as many events as I like. And it's just a different take on traditional media. And I do a lot more editorials, I would say, and that's kind of like my position and what I've morphed into at the company. So I get to, you know, do hardcore journalism stuff all day, which is super fun. But we have lighthearted articles and, you know, small ones and social media based ones. So there's a little bit of stuff for everyone on the site. But when it comes down to it, and I tell people this all the time, I was like, when it comes down to it and you have to put the pen to pad or fingers to keyboard, we hold up with anyone out there. So it's a great read, and hopefully people like it when they check it out.
By the way, very shout cool. out to Black Sports Online, because I don't know if you know this. I don't know if you listen to the Shaq podcast, but he's always espousing on you guys' behalf. So as he says, this is coming from Shaq, not me, guys, but he says white people – go to TMZ, Black people go to BSO. So that's what Shaq says.
By the way, so I see I see the back statistics, like in the background. I swear, I kid you not, 58% of our readers are white.
Yeah.
Mind boggling, right? Like, so the census is out. We are still red, primarily by our Caucasian followers. Thank you, guys. We love you all.
Hey, Kel, so question for you. Obviously, you were a radio guy too, but I think you were more in producing, right? as well.
Correct.
So I was a DJ before I even went into radio, and even radio, I literally did, you know, I dipped my water into my toes into radio just, you know, less than 2 years. And it was all late night stuff. And we recorded everything back then on what's called a DAT machine, right? Doing remixes, et cetera. But how'd you get into podcasting? And you brought up Andreas. How'd you meet Andreas and then decide, hey, this is the route we want to go with the corner?
Well, I met Andreas. It's funny because we were at a USC event. I forgot the numbered event, and we sit on Media Row, and it's right next to the Octagon and everything. So there's not too many minorities covering UFC. It's like that in a lot of sports when you go to live events. There's not a lot of women. There's not a lot of minorities, all this stuff. It's journalism still, you know, it's a hard industry to crank into at that level. And people do it for years on end. So it's still predominantly like male-based, white-based coverage. Even though the younger journalists, it's starting to skew differently. So Andreas, myself, and there was one other journalist. We're the only like black journalists there. And coincidentally, Dave Schaller, who just recently left the UFC, he works for the Sixers now as their PR head, sat us all next to each other on the back row.
Ouch.
So the entire event, we're just making jokes on Twitter, and we're just adding him the whole time. We're like, Dave, is this your equivalent of the back of the bus? And then he's like laughing and stuff. Like, and then we started a hashtag. It was a minority reporters row. And we just like took pictures of the back. So that's how I met Andreas, because they sat us all next to each other. So that happened, and then we just kept in contact after that. And then Loudspeakers Network, which is one of the biggest podcast networks in the U.S., wanted to give Andreas a show, and they wanted him to talk about pro wrestling, boxing, MMA. They just felt that it was an under-tapped media outlet out there that they can bring. And like you said, MMA podcasts generally, and to this day, are guest-based. So they bring on this fighter, that fighter. Ariel Helwani show is like that, which is great. But it's just a myriad of fighters just rotating in and giving interviews. There's very little time for personality. I mean, outside of Joe Rogan's podcast, it's really hard to find some. So in the MMA world, and his is still guest-based. So it's just like, all right, we're like, you know what? We'll have guests on occasionally, but we want to be the talent. We want to bring the entertainment to MMA that we don't see. So Andreas reached out. He said he needed a co-host. And he was like, you know what? I just started you immediately because we just have jokes and we laugh. And I told him I had a background in producing. So, yeah, we record the show every week. I produce it by myself. I set everything up. I do the intro, all the music, all that stuff. And thankfully, I know all the back-end stuff. And we went from there, and it's been great.
Cal, there's a couple of questions that we kind of get out of the way when we're getting to know our guests. And when you were reviewing and catching up on the sport, were there any fighters or fights that piqued your interest when you were going through the back catalog of fights, learning about MMA?
I had seen it briefly, like just over friend's house for fights. So, I mean, I was familiar with the Chuck Liddells, the Rampage Jackson, so on and so forth. You know, the general names people knew throughout the early 2000s, Tito Ortiz. But I guess what piqued my interest, which is no different than wrestling, I guess everything blends together, and it's my taste in hip-hop as well, is I kind of go into the quote-unquote underground stuff first, and then I build to the mainstream stuff. So when I was going back, I loved Pride. I loved WEC. Strikeforce, where now we have tons of champions from Strikeforce. But I could watch Strikeforce every day if you let me. It does in the archives. So that stuff piqued my interest. So seeing, you know, Jose Aldo in like 2008, or seeing Uriah Faber, someone who's retiring this week coming up, and seeing his early fights and seeing these guys, and people don't realize that these lighter weight classes are still relatively new to the UFC. They were built on heavyweights and light heavyweights. So seeing guys like Dominic Cruz, who's pound for pound number one fighter in the world, Conor McGregor went in and had a platform 5 years ago. it just was non-existent in the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
So just seeing these type of things, it was great going back and catching up on that, seeing the action, and seeing more than what was just presented to people in the early 2000s, which was still good, but there was something to offer in different weight classes. And now we see women taking that jump now, just like the lighter weight classes did before them.
Hey, Kel, we're going to run out of time on this because I'll tell you, I can go on and on because of you guys were doing such a good job in terms of you and Andreas talking about who the best pound-for-pound fighter is. And you guys went pretty well into the whole Demetrius Johnson. Well, maybe we can get into this later, actually, after we get into the card. But I want to ask you this. You hear so many MMA journalists, because you're more than just an MMA journalist. You follow boxing. I'm sure you watched the Molina-Joshua fight last night. But you hear so many journalists say that they – right? And I wasn't surprised. You know what? I should drop the Nate Diaz drop there, but I'm not surprised how that is. Right?
I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
But you hear so many journalists say that they can't root for fighters, you know, that they can't do this, they can't do that. Why is that? Because every other sport does it. It doesn't make a difference whether it's football, whether it's basketball, certainly basketball, baseball. Journalists do root for teams. They do root for players. Why is it that in MMA specifically, it seems like journalists are like, oh, well, we can't really root for that? Because, I mean, heck, I'm always rooting for Miesha Tate.
I guess MMA is different. One, because it is an offshoot of the boxing media, which is very traditional. So anyone who's covered a fight or for people listening, wondering about covering a fight, probably the most traditional form is boxing. And then boxing also has a lower tier, which is just like YouTube guys and people who are wildly unprofessional. But at the top, you still have guys like Dan from ESPN or Kevin Ioli. You know, it's hyper-professional at the top. So you don't have people, one, who are on television all the time. So that happened in NBA media, NFL media, all this stuff. You don't have beat writers, which is another huge aspect to it. So people can be fans and rooting interest for their teams because they were beat writers. So if you look at Dan Le Batard, he's a Miami fan in all regards, but he was on the beat for years, so he can be openly a fan. You know, you look at anyone from Boston, they can show their fandom because they were beats for NBA, NFL, whatever it may be. They had a rooting interest because your team does well, your product does well. No one wants to talk. I was in Kansas City when the Chiefs were horrible, and it was painstakingly tough to go into work every day as a producer at the radio station and just had to take calls from people who say how bad the Royals suck every day.
Yeah.
So the Royals, it was like, man. And then I left and the Royals won the World Series. You're welcome, Kansas City.
Yeah.
but like that's true. There's no beat in MMA. Personally, I root for drama. I root for the story. So I may not root for individual fighters, but every time Conor McGregor fights, I'm going to pick him. I'm going to root for him because it's compelling. Like, I would love to say Ronda Rousey's going to lose. She might lose at the end of the month. But am I rooting for her to lose? No, because when she wins, it's better for the sport. It's better for me as a journalist. It gives me more angles and lines and story narratives. And I can write a million pieces on how Cyborg is going to dismantle her and why she should run for her life. But that only comes with a win. So I have rooting interest in her winning. And that's what I go into every fight for. I mean, you know, John Jones included. Like, John Jones is not my favorite person, but I root for him to win all the time because he's compelling. He's a train wreck. You always want to watch the train wreck.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. And a lot of journalists still – MMA is also a weird thing. I mean, it's so young. These people have been in it for 10 years. Like, I'm one of the newest people to break into the industry when I look around. Everyone else has been covering it for a long time. They develop relationships with these people. They've seen them since they were 20 fighting, you know, in the back alleys of California to where the sport is now. So a lot of these people, it's like, you know, I can't root publicly because I'm actually privately friends with this person. So it skews all the way to the opposite end of the spectrum where they go from being a good, impartial journalist to just going over the top and saying, you know, I can't show any emotion towards anyone.
Right, right. It's really interesting, isn't it? Because behind the scenes, I mean, we always hear John Morgan say on the road show, you know, I'm not supposed to be rooting for this guy, but I kind of do. And, you know, so it's kind of a weird balance that these guys have. But let's move on, getting to know you just a little bit more, because earlier on in the interview, you talked about your love of hip hop. So why don't you get into that? Because we're all both music fans on this show as well. What are you into right now? And you know, what brought you to hip hop?
Well, I mean, I was born and raised in New York City. So New York City's 90s hip hop culture, my whole family was like kind of immersed in it. My uncle was head of promotions at Bad Boy. And before then he actually worked at Uptown Records. So I was like the little weird kid running around the offices, you know, bothering Andre Harrell like in the 90s. Like I was like 4 or 5 years old running around. I remember hanging out with Heavy D just in the office.
Damn, shout out to Heavy D.
Nice.
Yeah.
God rest
Heavy D and the boys. I mean, yeah. My uncle did all. I remember him doing a promotional campaign for Leaders of the New School before Busta Rhymes was Busta Rhymes. Like, I remember all of that stuff. So I was kind of just knee deep in that culture. And then as I grew up, I just love music. I love expression. Same reason I guess I write. I love all forms of music. I mean, I grew up Puerto Rican, so with my Puerto Rican side of the family, so I love salsa.
Shout out to the Boricuas, you know, right?
Yeah, I love Celia Cruz and, you know, Tito Rojas, Tito Puente. I love all of that. 80s music, 70s music. I just have an appreciation for everything. I was huge into punk rock growing up, which is odd for a kid in New York. I've always been weirdly eclectic. I was wearing, like ASIC sneakers and weird stuff. I was wearing skateboard sneakers to school when kids had Jordans. I grew up on, you know, Green Day and early Blink-182, like Cheshire Cat, like Weird Al. Stuff that a lot of people, you know, in New York just don't have, but just being born into music, you kind of get that aspect of, you know, be eclectic, just don't be in hip hop. But now, as I get older, I still listen to everything. I'm glad hip hop is better. Because during my, like, quote-unquote formative years, it kind of sucked in the early 2000s. And I was like, oh, whatever. And then kind of rock took a dip, too. It wasn't a great time for music. Like, rock took a dip. Everything that wasn't pop just kind of went downhill. But it's nice to see everything come back up. So it's good. You know, we get guys like J. Cole and Kendrick. And I'm a huge Lupe Fiasco fan. Childish Gambino, Donna Glover. Oh, people. I love when people are open-minded and can put together good narratives and have good wordplay. I've always been a stickler for that.
Hey, Kel. So Proteus actually took my question on the music. And so I'm not going to get into the, so shout out to Proteus. Great job there. But I do want to ask you about this. I'm not going to get into Kanye because that's a whole nother discussion and a different, because I know you guys always talk Kanye. But I did want to ask you about this, and you and I spoke about this briefly when we spoke on Saturday, but I got to ask you this. Talk to me about professional wrestling. Why professional wrestling? Because I guess I just don't get it. I get it back in the NWO days, back in the WCW. I don't know if that was called the Attitude era, whatever the heck that was called. I just don't get it now in the McMahon. It just seems too contrived, and you guys actually talk about this a lot, so whenever you guys talk about it, I kind of try to get into it, but I just can't get into it.
I would say anyone looking to get back into pro wrestling, because once again, I didn't watch pro wrestling from maybe 2002 through 2011. I took the hiatus like most wrestling fans did. I was like, I'm a grown man, why am I watching pro wrestling still? But what brought me back, CM Punk's pipe bomb and the rise of independent wrestling, which was happening, I guess, early 2005, 2006, but people didn't take notice to it. But promotions like Ring of Honor, New Japan Pro Wrestling, man, there's so many. We love the indie stuff. If you listen to our podcast, we're always talking about the indies. We're talking about now NXT, which is quote-unquote developmental for WWE, but it's way better than the main roster product because they have all these guys who are 30 years old and were independent wrestlers, and they know how to wrestle. So it's not just, you know, pulling an ex-football player meathead off of the street and saying, you know what, you look like the Hulk here. You're going to be our champion. There's so much more than that now. It's now what brought us to the sport in the 90s. So if there's a time to get back into it, this is it. And the easiest way to put it is the reason we're all fans in the 90s is because in the 80s, Vince McMahon took the company from his father. He said, I'm going to the territories around the United States, and I'm finding the best wrestlers. He found Hulk Hogan, who was a character. Okay, cool. He'll be the spearhead. But everyone else was great wrestlers. There was the Dusty Rhodes, the Ric Flairs, the Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. All these guys, great wrestlers from independent territories. And said, I'm putting them all under one umbrella. And it made his company the biggest professional wrestling company in the world. Now we see the exact same thing happening with Triple H. If you guys don't know, he's the executive now. He wrestles a little bit, but not so much anymore. And he runs NXT. And he's the same model. He said, mm-hmm. You know what? We're not going to just bring random people in here and try to teach them how to be wrestlers. We're going to go. There's no longer territories in the United States, but there's independent wrestling companies. And we have more money than them. So we're going to go out. We're going to find their stars. We're going to pay them more. We're going to take them and put them all under one umbrella. And NXT was formed. And now we're getting these guys on the main product and everything else. So it's we had to go through dark days. The 2000s were like the 70s. It was like, eh. And then now we're in the 80s. Where it's like, okay, independent wrestling was dope. And then now we're about to hit the stride where we get back into like that 90s form of wrestling where it's like the best wrestlers, the best characters, all these guys are about to be on the WWE product again as long as Vince steps out of the way and, you know, doesn't let his ego get in the way of better business. The older you get, the bigger the ego gets. So Vince, you know, doesn't want the company to do well despite him. And he still, you know, does stupid stuff. This guy, Roman Reigns, is a champion. Why? Because he's related to The Rock. And women like his muscles. So that's, and people boo him. Every crowd boos him. But Vince McMahon loves the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of his looks. So there's still an occasional that. But other than that, the other champions, they're all indie wrestler guys. Kevin Owens is like 5'11", 280 pounds, fat guy, can wrestle amazingly well. Yeah, stuff you never thought you'd see. We haven't seen it since like Dusty Rhodes. When was the last time we saw a fat guy champion? So it's like, taking it back to there, where skill and character are now the main points once again. No different than Mankind, Stone Cold, Steve Austin. All these guys were character and skill were first and foremost. Shawn Michaels of the world, everything. And if you didn't have that, you couldn't be a star. And we're getting back to that. It's not just looks. It's not just John Cena, who actually has been wrestling quite well. But it's not him and Batista. The guys who really killed it in the 2000s. It's just like, okay, whoever has muscle is pretty much going to be champion. That's kind of out of the window now. So that's why I got back into it. It's fun. There's a ton of wrestling on television. Check out, once again, don't watch Raw or SmackDown first. Check out some of the other stuff. Lucha Underground is really good. Production-wise, it looks amazing. ROH, wrestling-wise, is probably the best. There's a ton of free stuff out there. Get into that. You want to see an amazing wrestler, look up Ricochet. Ricochet, just YouTube him, one of the best wrestlers in the world, independent wrestler. He does some moves that will just wow you. If you were a fan in the 90s, and you saw Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy wrestle, and you thought, wow, these guys are crazy. They're going to kill themselves. Ricochet's that times a thousand. So look up that guy. You'll be like, okay, I got to start watching this again.
But lately he's been jobbing a lot. So you know what? Hold on. Wait a second. Did I just say that I'm watching Lucha Underground? Oops.
Yeah.
Never mind. All right. Oops. Busted. Oh, my gosh. All right. Boy, that I just messed that up. All right. Hey, Kel, before we go into MMA completely, because I want to go into UFC 206, where Proteus was at in Toronto, and, of course, UFC Fight Night 102, I should say. I think you said it on your podcast, too. It's like something they had to do to get into New York. But let's talk. You and Andreas had an interesting take on the MAAA or the MMAAA or whatever they want to call it. So let's talk about that, because Proteus has really been strongly on the union side. I said that it would never happen, and obviously it cannot be a union. I know Andreas was saying, why don't they just call it a union? They can't, because they're not employees. They're works for hire, so right. They have to be an alliance or a guild or whatever you want to call it. But let's talk about that, because there was backtracking and backtracking by many people. Everyone talks about Cerrone basically stepping back a bit and saying, well, should talk to Dana. And like you said, well, there goes that, right? It's probably never going to happen again. But, and then of course, I think Kennedy hasn't really backtracked, but interestingly enough, for those that don't listen to my favorite podcast, Fighter and the Kid, shout out to Fighter and the Kid and Brendan Schaub, but he actually is in it as well. And I think if you listen to his podcast, you'll see that there are technically these guys that got in are actually in it. It seems like they're in it monetarily, like vested into it. What say you about the MMA, AA, and Proteus, I'm sure, has something to say about that. What say you, Kel?
No, I think a union eventually is needed, and it's only needed because Dana White took the steps to make the UFC a legit corporation. Like, it's no longer just a collective of independent contractors. When you tell everyone to wear a fight kit and that they can't bring their sponsors into the octagon anymore, you have now gone from independent contractors coming in, like in boxing, where you can wear whatever on your shorts, so you can advertise however you like, to a sports league. They are the NBA. They are the NFL at a smaller scale. They have jerseys. They have Reebok as a sign. So they have all of these things. They've now took the steps to become a professional organization, and the fighters now have to take the step to have a union. Does that mean giving up the rights to be an independent contractor? Yes. And that comes with its own hurdles, which are scary. Change is always scary.
Sure.
And fighters want that freedom to be, you know, I can do whatever I want. I don't want training limitations, which is something Daniel Cormier brought up a week ago when he got injured, is he's his own boss. His coaches can't tell him what to do. He can train three times a day. If it leads to injuries, it leads to injuries. He does what he wants. Now, if you're no longer an independent contractor, the UFC can sanction how much you train. So they can say you can only train for 3 hours a day, like the NFL does. Like, you can only hit on Wednesdays, or you can only go full pads on Wednesdays, to keep people safe and healthy. And the fighters don't want that. And there's also other stuff. You get taxed. You get, you know, you can get slotted pay, so you can't negotiate every fight like Conor McGregor does. Or Nate Diaz saw a jump. Nate Diaz, before Conor McGregor fight, Nate Diaz made $30,000 to show up, $30,000 to win in almost all his UFC fights. The first Conor McGregor fight, he was guaranteed $500,000. The second one, he was guaranteed $2 million. When you have a union and all this stuff that has to collectively bargain and they slot stuff, you won't see a jump like that. And that's what fighters, they're gambling on their skills, but losing out in the long run. There's only so many Conor McGregors. There's only so many people who hit the lottery ticket like Nate Diaz did. So you're gambling that you're going to get one of these fights. And there's just not enough to go around. So the bottom level of UFC fighters, they struggle. They have regular jobs still.
Like, sometimes more than one.
Work. Yeah. And then still have to train. These guys are getting paid $8,000 a fight without insurance. So you see all these cuts, the nose breaking, all this. They don't have insurance. Or if they do, they pay for it out of pocket. They pay to train. They pay for all of these things that if you become a legit sports entity and you have a union and give up your right as an independent contractor, would then be collectively bargained and given to you. So you'd have health care for you and your family. All this, and fighters just are reluctant to change. But once again, the reason why this association, the MMAAA, is going to fail is because it's outside of the UFC. It's not through the UFC. So the NBA, NFL, MLB, their associations are through the company. They elect a union head. And usually it's an ex-player. So they would need an ex-fighter, like a Dan Henderson. Like, you know, Hendo's wildly respected. That's the guy who from the inside is close enough to the UFC. He's given his life to the sport, who can go and say, you know what, I can be a union head. And you need someone likable to go and negotiate both sides.
Yeah.
But you have to do it in conjunction with the company. And that's where they're going wrong. They're doing it to spite Dana White in the UFC.
Yep.
You then have to give and take, and the fighters just want to take and not give. And also, the UFC just wants to take, but the UFC is going to win because they're the corporation. You're never going to be bigger than the Shield, as the NFL says. Like, you can take your independent contract to Bellator and fight for $80,000 as their top star. Or you can get a UFC title and fight for $500K every time. So it's like you're caught. So there is no competition. You're not independent. You can fake like you are, but this is the big time. So the corporation is always going to win. They have to give. And I think it's time for a union. I think it's great. It would have been better when Conor McGregor wasn't just blowing all these records out of the water, because you find a guy like that when everyone was getting underpaid, and it gives more leverage. Now everyone's not getting underpaid. Conor McGregor's breaking records and getting tens of millions of dollars. So now you're not going to bandwagon him. He's not going to come in to it when maybe 2 years ago he would have. And then became a star. So you have to start low. You got to, even if you don't get him, go through, collectively bargain something like insurance or whatever. Because until then, the UFC is just lawless and they can do whatever they want. Like with the fight kits. I mean, fighters lost tons of money on the sponsorships.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of money. Yeah, and if you would have just told them a year before then, like, you know what, go in there, talk to Dana, say, you know what, we'll give up all our sponsors. We'll wear whatever you want, but give us health care. They might have got it. Instead, they held fast. They want to be independent contractors, and he bullied them in the end anyway. So it looks bad. It's time for a union. But is it going to happen anytime soon? Probably not. Dana White has made the moves to be the NFL, the NBA, all this stuff, and somehow it's kept the best, I guess, the best aspects of professional boxing as well. So he's cornered the fighters into a box where they can't get out. They don't have leverage. That's the last thing a union needs, leverage. Like, are you going to hold out? Are you going to boycott? Are you going to be locked out? Because that's what it takes.
Yeah.
And the fighters aren't, you know, they're not together. The other sports, every sport has had a lockout. And then you come to a good, happy medium. They're not going to lock each other out because they don't have insurance. They don't have any way to make money. There's no guaranteed contracts. You have to fight to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a horrible cycle that they're caught in, so I don't expect it to change anytime soon.
Well, Kel, it's definitely early days, and I've spoken about this on this show a lot. And as with you, I agree, it needs to happen. This is probably the best time for it to start to happen. One thing, and I know everybody's been really down on Bjorn Rebney being a part of this, but the more I listen to the man, the more, you know, I figure out how educated he is. Okay, what are his motives? I don't know. Clearly, he's obviously going to want to start making some money at some point, and him telling us that he's doing this out of the goodness of his heart can't continue to go on forever. But I believe they have a plan. I believe they have a step-by-step plan that they're going to follow in order to go from where they are now to where you were saying, Kel, that they need to be, you know, kind of working their way in and working with the UFC. The one thing that I thought that Bjorn said that was, you know, not right is that they can go on and without having to talk to the UFC, without having to have them part of it, move forward. And that maybe they can until a certain point, right, Kel? They can until a certain point when the UFC says, okay, now we need you to be a union. We need you to go from being an association to being a union, and then we can work together. Because if some of the numbers that Bjorn is spinning out about how the money is split up, the revenue is split up between the company and the fighters, we have a really big issue. So early days yet. Let's see where it goes. I think it's probably got the best chance of happening if they can keep those fighters, those big faces, those recognizable faces on board, like Cowboy, and you know, move forward slowly.
Yeah, I think it was just, I agree. It's just they went about it in the wrong way. Like, they had the right ideals, went about it the wrong way. Bjorn being the face of it, like, you need a fighter who has great communication with the UFC. Because like you said, he's never been on good terms with Dana White. Dana White buried him. That's why he's not at Bellator. Dana White made it personal and wanted to bury him. Yep. So that was a bad jumping off point. So it looks like he's attacking the organization that really, as a union or association, you're supposed to be working with. And then, even then, I understand their logic behind it. It's like, yeah, he did this to people at Bellator. It's just what he did. So you go find someone who's done it before to help you not get it done to you. But it looks horrible on a PR front. It's like having a huge dictator and then going to a smaller dictator and saying, you know what, you lead us because you know how to be a dictator. Like, that makes no sense. It's just horrible for logistics. And then you need big-name fighters, like you said. And their biggest-name fighter is GSP, and he didn't sign with the UFC before he did this. Yep. If you wanted this to have merit, GSP should have took one fight deal with the UFC, then made the announcement, and the union or association could have negotiated his next UFC contract. And you're into the UFC with a huge fighter. Instead, they announced the union first. He's still not into the UFC. He's officially not back. He can't go to Bellator because his contract's tied up in litigation. And he's just stuck. So it's like, why not just tell him, like, George, just take a fight. Take one fight, and we're in there. We just need to get our toe in with a superstar. Then maybe we get to John Jones. Then maybe we get someone else after they see how much we got you and your money for a second fight. And see how we get you health care, we get you benefits, and we get you all this stuff in your contract when we rework it. But instead, they went all backwards on it. And GSP now is part of the enemy, and Dana doesn't have to will. GSP was, what, 3-4 years ago, the biggest name in the sport. But you look at his numbers, he was pulling 700,000 pay-per-views. Conor McGregor does that in his sleep. Conor's triple there. Ronda's... Like, you look at the top 10 pay-per-views, GSP's name is in there once now. Conor McGregor has 5 of the top 6. Brock Lesnar has 2 or 3 of the other ones. Ronda has 1. So in the top 10, you have Ronda Rousey with 1, Brock Lesnar with 3, and Conor McGregor with 5. GSP has the other one. And he might not even be there anymore. Anderson Silva might have surpassed that with Wyman fight. So it's like, we don't need you. And that's the real aspect of it. He's stepping back in like it was 3 years ago and he was the savior of the UFC and he was carrying them. It's like, no, we created new stars. It's sad, but life comes at you fast. Like, it is what it is. They don't need him. He's not a huge star. He doesn't have the personality that it takes in 2016. That worked in 2012, and the lay and pray and just winning worked. Ask Jose Aldo how much that works. His next fight might not even be pay-per-view. And he's one of the best fighters we've seen in a decade. You ask any casual fan who Jose Aldo is, he's a guy who got knocked down in 13 seconds. They don't care about winning and technical stuff. They care about if you can talk. They all know Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz lost too, but he's a hero because he can talk. He can sell. DSP can't do that. So the UFC doesn't need him. Nate Diaz, Nick Diaz, Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, these are all bigger stars than DSP today. Michael Bisping is a bigger star today than George St. Pierre because he's on television. He talks trash. He's also foreign, so he brings a foreign base with him in the UK, just like GSP brings Canada. So what do you need GSP for? Is he going to draw casual fans in the U.S., the new fans of the UFC? Those old fans, the nostalgic fans, the same people who watched Anderson Silva on UFC Fight Pass last time, will be there.
Yeah.
But the new fans, they don't care about GSP. They care about people throwing chairs at a press conference. And the biggest name in the sport saying he's going to box Mayweather. That's what they care about. GSP's not moving the needle. He's not going to say any of this. So they piggybacked. Cowboy Cerrone's great. He's not a superstar. That's why he fights 6 times a year. He got to feed the family, too. He takes all these lavish trips and does skydiving and all this stuff. He's got to pay the bill. So he fights 6 times a year because he's not a superstar. You have one superstar, and you didn't even get the guy back into the sport. And now he's stuck. What are you going to give? They have to give GSP $500,000. And by the way, that's $500,000 guaranteed, some pay-per-view buys. How much better would last night's UFC 206 been with GSP?
Right.
Arguably, I can argue that he would have ruined the card. If he was the main event.
Ooh.
On the main event, on the pay-per-view card, we saw possibly the fight of the year with the Korean Superboy and Cub Swanson. We saw a knockout in the main event, and it was dismantled Anthony Pettis for Max Holloway. And then we saw Cowboy Cerrone kick Matt Brown's face off. So we had finishes throughout the card.
Stuff.
Yeah, I think we had finishes from the last fight on the UFC FS1 card all the way through the end. And the only one that wasn't a finish was the Korean Superboy standing up like a zombie and getting knocked out like 8 times but still standing on his feet somehow.
What are we talking about?
So that's the only fight that went to the decision. So, DSP would have laid and prayed. He would have did, 10 strikes per round, would have been on his back, and would have just swallowed a guy. And he would just hugged him for 5 rounds. Would have bowed at the end and left. He would have ruined the card.
Well, let's,
no joke. It would have been a letdown after those fights beforehand.
Let's take what you're saying and let's transition into the card because we're going to swiftly run out of time. Because we could probably go on about unionization and all these things for hours. But unfortunately, we don't have that much time. So, Tony, why don't you take over and bring us into the card, please?
All right, guys. So let's go into by the way, I do think that GSP still has a crowd. But let's get into it, guys. The UFC 206. By the way, are you guys listening to the song in the background?
Yep.
Nothing. Yeah. I got crickets on that. UFC 206, guys. Holloway, not Holiday, versus Pettis. So let's get into it, Cal. We go. Obviously, let's go into it. Catch weight at 148 because Anthony Pettis could not make weight. Let's get into it. Holloway versus Pettis. Thoughts, Cal?
I thought it went to textbook. I had picked Holloway to win by 4th round stoppage. He won by 3rd round stoppage. Anthony Pettis was 1-3 in his last 4 fights. And then his one win was a close fight against Oliveira, where he happened to finish him towards the end of that fight. It was a 3-round fight, not a 5. I didn't see anything from Anthony Pettis that showed me that he wasn't still on the skid. He moved down and had one fight in the division and was fighting for a title. Interim title. It's a mythical champion.
Ouch.
For a guy who was 1-3. It made no sense. So I was like, okay, I don't expect him to be the guy who's on a 9-fight winning streak, whose last loss was against Conor McGregor when he was 21 years old. Now, granted, do I think Max Holloway is a great fighter? Sure. Do I think he can hang with Jose Aldo? Yes. I don't like this current state of Jose Aldo. He hasn't had his killer instinct since WEC. He just survives. So do I think Max Holloway has a chance? Yeah, sure. His work rate's good enough. He can probably hang in there with Aldo. It could go either way. Do I think anyone in this division is as good as Conor? No. Did last night show me that? Yeah. No one is on Conor's level in this division. Max Holloway lost to Conor. Conor tore his ACL in the first round and whooped him for the final 2. The guy had one leg. So it's a healthy Conor McGregor against Max Holloway washes him in the first round. So Holloway last night was great. He was good enough to beat Anthony Pettis, who has lost to everyone lately. Lost to So, Holloway,
man,
to me, has looked great, but the better fight for Holloway would have been Frankie Edgar. That would have been a tougher fight. Holloway does what he did to Pettis last night to Frankie Edgar, I would have been like, okay, this kid's for real. Because no one does that to him. Everyone lately has been doing this to Anthony Pettis. Anthony Pettis is
absolutely
on a one-way trip to Bellator. It is
ouch.
You're lost 4 of your last 5. Man, it's all right. Go to Bellator, try to win a championship. It's cool. That's where you go to finish your career. He's done at 28 years old. He peaked early.
Ouch.
Yeah,
who the fuck is that guy?
Wow.
Yeah, no.
It was just a wash fight to me. It was okay. It went down how I expected.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you were saying. One thing I did note before you came on the line, Kel, with DJ Tony, was that live, Holloway seems like he's coming into his own. You know what I mean? He really had a lot of confidence, and all week we kind of saw where he could be. You know what I mean? Where the character that he could become. He had some great lines, some great quips. And like you said, Showtime has lost to everybody, including this time the sauna. That's the sauna won on that one. And it was really disappointing for me. It was disappointing for me for him to miss weight and for it not to have been for a belt. I thought that this fight would have been a huge waste had they not said, okay, Holloway, you're going to still fight for the belt. Pettis, you're not, which is what they ended up doing. And I thought that was a good move on their part because, again, this was a pay-per-view. I didn't think it was pay-per-view quality. And they really did need some sort of belt at the top to kind of sell it a little bit more. Now, the card came through, right? And we say this all the time about cards that we think are light or that don't have big name stars on them. Well, I don't, but people do. And people were really down on this card, and it did come through. And anybody who didn't buy the pay-per-view or didn't see it, that's what replays are for. Don't worry, the UFC will still take your money later on today. Don't worry about that. But I thought the way that Holloway came through, he did look impressive against someone who'd never been finished before, finished him, and looks good with that belt. That tie's a little crazy, though, I'm going to tell you what.
No, I definitely agree. Holloway deserves it. He deserves the accolade. It's so weird. 145, 155 is in limbo because everyone's fighting for second. It's like, you know what? Eddie Alvarez looked great. He stopped a guy in RDA who was, dominant for a year and a half prior.
Yes, he was.
Eddie Alvarez came through and wrecked him in the first round. And you're like, wow, what a performance. And then he gets in there against Connor, and it's like, yeah. This is like, okay, this is the same guy? It's like, what? And I feel like the same fate would be for Max Holloway. It's like, man, this guy's on a 10-5 winning streak. Jose Aldo hadn't lost in 10 years. All this stuff. Boom, it's over in a drop of a hat. So everyone's fighting for second. So it's like, Max Holloway, you're a great fighter. The kid is everything you would want in a champion. So it's great to see. It's well-deserved. He's humble. He just wants to fight. He's there for the right reasons in the sport. He talks a nice little bit of trash. You know, he's just confident. So he has the full package. It's just, even if he beats Jose Aldo, what did you do besides beat someone who lost to a guy in 13 seconds?
So, Kel, let's go into someone that wants a belt to someone that seemingly doesn't want a belt, Donald Cerrone. What say you about the Cerrone versus, the immortal Matt Brown, one of my favorite fighters? I think he's done. But what say you?
I don't know. I like Matt Brown, right? Like, he's one of the guys who can lose every time out, but his fights are never boring. There's always a spot in the UFC for guys like that, in my opinion. You know what? I don't care if you get knocked out every other time. It's going to be a fight. And he did really well until he got head kicked. The only thing he couldn't stop all fight is the head kick. He got kicked in the head 8 times. The last one was the doozy. But outside of that, he actually did really well. I think the cards probably were split, I believe, between him and Cowboy before he got kicked in the head.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, when he was in that fight, his chin has gone from him. That happens when you've been in multiple wars and been knocked out before. Not to steal another Conor quote, but he says, the chin never recovers. You can train everything. You can't train your chin. And it's true.
Yeah.
And people wonder why Conor lost and got tapped out by Nate. It's because Conor really thinks that. Conor was like, oh, Nate's about to knock me out. I'm just going to dive on the floor and have him choke me. Because once my chin gets knocked out once, it'll get knocked out easier every other time.
Wow.
So he got tapped. And it was a smart decision because he believes the chin never recovers. And I promise you, look at Conor's record. He's never been knocked out. He will go to the ground. He has better ground skills now than ever. But before, he had poor ground skills. And he'll get tapped. He'll live to fight another day. He'll come back and keep it moving. As long as he doesn't get knocked out. Because there's something to say about that. And Matt Brown's been in too many wars. The sound on that Cowboy Cerrone kick was just monstrous, though. Sounded like a shotgun hit him. And that's, you know, that's how it goes. Great job for Cowboy Cerrone. He wants to come back again in like a month and a half and do his usual Cowboy stuff. Then I support that.
Crazy,
Cowboy's
man.
A great fighter.
I saw somebody online on Twitter say, I like Matt Brown, but he's no Cowboy. And that's the truth. Now, if Matt Brown would have just continued to not be friends with Donald Cowboy Cerrone, as soon as he went for that high five at the beginning of the third and with that little bro hug, it was immediately over. Immediately. He must have let down his guard or something. And then, boom, Cowboy got him. Cowboy got him. He was trying to get him all week. Come on, let's shake hands. Let's be friends. And Matt Brown was holding steady till that third round. Boom. Knockout KO. Way to go, Donald Cerrone. He's a trickster, that one. He thinks he wants to make you his friend. And then he'll head kick you in the head. Don't worry. Yeah, beautiful kick. As we've said many, many times, Cerrone looks phenomenal at 170. I never want to see him not fight at 70s. There's absolutely no reason for it. Dude's a beast. Let him fight as much as he wants, honestly. He took some damage. He did take some damage. He took some shots to the head. But if he feels okay, he clears all the medicals, let him fight again. He wants to fight in his hometown. I'm down. And as we were talking about Matt Brown. Yeah, for sure. As we were talking
call
about
Damian
Matt Brown.
Maya. Damian Maya.
Yeah, call him
again,
up.
Isn't
let's get that fight done.
Let's make it happen, because Maya is in line for the next title shot, I would say, at 170. You know what? Cowboy's a bigger seller. Cowboy deserves it. Throw him in there with Maya. If he can beat Maya, Cowboy gets the next title shot. He can pick his title, 155, 170, whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Just let me touch on Matt Brown real quick, and then we'll move on into Swanson Choi, which is another barn burner. What's next for Matt Brown? I think, guys, a little bit of well-needed, well-deserved time off before he gets back into the cage again. Maybe let that head trauma heal a little bit. We said after his last fight, he had a concussion for the first time in his career. I think he's okay. I think we just let him sit for a bit, you know, let him get better, book him another fight. Like you said, Kel, guys like that are going to have jobs in the UFC. He comes, he fights every time. He's a beast. And until he's taking more damage, I'd like to see him again, Tony. I'm not writing him off like you are. Maybe he's almost done, to be honest. I mean, maybe. But he did have a slide before earlier in his career, and he bounced back. And now we all love him. So let's give him a little bit of time and see where he goes from there. Kel, let's go ahead and transition into Swanson versus Choi. Boy, what was that about, eh? What a crazy, crazy fight. I kept saying to people online, because they're like, I can't believe this Choi guy is still standing. I said, don't you know they just create zombies over there in South Korea? Right, Kel?
Yeah, I mean, the kid is great. The best way I could put it on Twitter last night was, Choi is going to be a star in the future. This is what happens when he's young. MMA is not built for 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds. It's not. John Jones is a freak of nature. It's not built for someone that young. Most of the champions we see now are in their mid-30s or later. It's just when you hit your stride. It's called mixed martial arts for a reason. You come in with one skill set, you have to take time to learn everything else. So Choi, you know, he's great. He's a prospect. He's young. He has to develop. Come Swanson is the veteran. He stood in there. He landed some good shots. And he still couldn't get the kid out of there. A fight where Choi took a loss, but to me came out the bigger star than Cub Swan. And
Absolutely. That's
what it's supposed to do. That's what you want your veterans to do. You never tell your veterans to go into a fight with a prospect to lose. That's not the case. Everyone goes into a fight to win. But you know what? Make it exciting. Put on a performance. And Cub Swanson somehow boosted himself enough maybe to get one more run in the division. One more win probably puts him, like, you know, in the title picture. Why not? Give him one more title picture thing. He earned that now. Give him a guy in the top five. That's fine. And then Choi, on the other hand, you give him two more fights, let him build it back up. But he always has this on his resume. People always remember this. His chin was trending. Like, the kid built himself. Yeah, he built himself a mystique, and that's what you need. Especially when people are – and it's just true when they're foreign and they don't speak the language – and it's hard to bridge that gap to stardom. not to get off topic, but Ishihara is one of the funniest guys in the UFC. And he's like on Tinder and stuff before fights, and he's always like, ladies, come in.
Oh.
There's still the language gap. So it's all through an interpreter and a translator. So if that was in English, people would love this kid. And Troy has that same kind of like swag. He dressed like Russell Westbrook before fights. Like, these are the things people have to see. And that's everything that will come along. So by the time he's ready to make that push, he has a nice little package there waiting for him. So there was no losers in this fight. The fans won. That's who won this fight because it was amazing. My fight of the year, even looking back on it today, I think it wins it.
Yeah, it was definitely a great fight. Swanson definitely looked in rare form. I don't think we've seen him looking like that in a while. He came to fight. He came to bring it. And one thing I do have to note, Tony, before you move on, is that Choi's face is never going to be the same again. Choi got all kinds of busted up. That nose.
Go ahead. Sorry, that was Rogan. Go ahead.
Of course it was Rogan. His nose is busted up. I think his orbital bone's probably broken. That guy's left side of his face is just unrecognizable. So great fight, though. Like you were saying, Kel, the top three fights on the night were just spectacular.
All right, guys, let's move on. Go ahead, Kel.
No, I was just saying, imagine having Rumble versus DC at the end of this.
Ooh.
Another fight, arguably, that probably would have ended in KO. It would have stopped it. It wasn't going to the judges, I'll tell you that. Either Rumble would get gassed and tapped again by DC, or he would have took DC's head off this time. Made him do a cartwheel last time. DC barely survived. So the cartwheel was well put together, more so than I even thought it would be. That fight would have been a little cherry on top, but hopefully I get to see that in Vegas now, so I'm not complaining.
Yeah, lucky you, right? Total attendance on that, by the way, 18,000. Total gate, 1.8 million. Fight of the night, bonuses to Swanson and Choi. Performance of the night to Holloway and, of course, Lando Venata with that weird kick. So shout out to Lando Venata. Let's go into the middleweight. We go, guys. And before we transition to Lewis, and then we'll get the heck out of here. Kelvin Gastelum versus Captain America, Tim Kennedy. I kind of saw this coming, but not like that. I actually thought Kennedy would lose via decision. Kel, what'd you see there?
I saw a guy who hasn't fought in 3 years. So, I mean, I picked Kelvin Gastelum on my podcast. Andreas Hale looked at me like I was crazy. I was like, no, this is the type of fight Kelvin Gastelum wins. You know, when he's not cutting weight and he's not overweight heading into a fight and, you know, messing cards up and trying to fight at 170, he's actually a pretty good fighter. He usually plays the underdog role. You have to bring something special to the table to beat him. And I didn't think Tim Kennedy won. We haven't seen him in so long. He had great fights 3 years ago, but I believe in Octagon Rust, even if, you know, the likes of Dominic Cruz and others don't. So you haven't fought in 3 years. Someone's really trying to punch you in the face. There's no headgear. This isn't sparring. And the hurdles he had to do even after that. Supposed to fight earlier at UFC 205. That gets canceled last second. You throw him right back in. So he makes a weight cut. He prepares for the weight cut for 205. That's canceled days before the event. He gains the weight back, has 3 more weeks of training camp, and has to cut again.
Yep.
Like, that's not something you should do even when you're an active fighter. Let alone a fighter coming off a hiatus. Like, everything was set up for him to lose. He prepared this whole time for Rashad Evans. He's getting a guy who's completely different on 3 weeks' notice. That you're not set up to win at that point. These late-notice fights are just huge, huge hindrances to a fighter. He prepared for 3 months for Rashad Evans. And Kelvin Gastelum came in 3 weeks. That's not better than anyone. Let alone Tim Kennedy. So I thought he was set up to fail. Once again, he'd come back, he could, you know, look like his old self and be fine. I think he would have beat Rashad Evans at UFC 205. Everything goes down the same. This was just not the best position to put that guy in. So big up to him. He still needed the money. I'm sure, you know, the paycheck is great. But, you know, he has to dust it off, come back, and show who he really is. And a lot of people don't take that into account. One weight cut is hard enough. 2 weight cuts in a matter of a month, and you're not winning that fight.
Mm-hmm. Agree. And we could really see it, right? We could really see it in Kennedy's performance. He just was slow, one step behind Kelvin all the time. And Tim Kennedy really made Kelvin Gastelum look good. You know what I mean? He made him look real good because of how he performed. And as you said, Kel, you know, the weight cuts and having to stay on weight for 3 weeks. And not only that, but, you know, he's been diving in swamps in somewhere in South America trying to find Hitler for the past 2-3 years. So, of course, you know, we were concerned about him coming back. And I don't know if he's done, guys, but that performance just was not good. Not good at all, and I felt bad for him. And then after the fights, I watched some Hunting Hitler. So there we go.
They definitely set him up for failure on that one. I think he'll come back strong, though. I expect him to come back strong. It wasn't his night. It wasn't good circumstances. We're never going to see a worse Tim Kennedy. At least he can, you know, hang his hat on that. That's probably the worst performance of his life. You can only go up from here.
Yeah, let's hope, right? Okay, so we've got a transition because we are swiftly running out of time, and 206 was not the only fight card that we saw this weekend. There were some fights from Albany, New York. I did not get a lot of opportunity to watch these fights, guys. I'm going to just be honest with you. I kind of saw the Lewis fight and the result there and the result of the Ngannou fight. But I didn't really get a chance to watch and sit down and watch. But what I did find impressive was Derek Lewis's performance. And Kel, I'm gonna ask you first. Did you get to see this fight card?
I did.
Okay.
Shout out to Andre.
So why don't you go ahead and give it to us? Nice.
No, Derek Lewis. You know, he came out slow to begin the fight, and it was, you know, he lost. First, I think, 2 rounds, but turned it around after that. And it's his first 5-round fight, and I was more impressed with his gas tank. At the end, he was really down about his performance and that, you know, he came out slow and sluggish and lost the first couple of rounds. But he showed that in a 5-round fight, he'll get better or at least stay the same while his opponent fades. And in the heavyweight division, there's a lot to be said for that. Just cardio and conditioning in the heavyweight division will take you a long way. So I didn't mind the fight. He just wants to knock people out all the time or in a timely manner. I don't think in his head anything should go past the first round. But as your opponents get better, these are the fights that you need. And it's better to do this fight now and get taken, quote-unquote, into deep waters now than having it be during your title fight for the first time. Like, this is the learning experience now that you can get to possibly be a future champion. And the heavyweight division needs new stars. He's one of great MMA followers on Twitter. He's hilarious. So if you don't follow the Black Beast, Derek Lewis, please do so on Twitter. It's funny. and he has personality. And knockout power. Personality and knockout power. Yeah. The only thing you need in a heavyweight division. So it's the great if he just new matchups.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even though he was fighting TJ, who's your mama, I thought that it was impressive not only that he stayed in there, but that he got that submission, you know? I mean, we don't see that a lot in the heavyweight division either. I mean, usually, like you said, Cal, we're seeing somebody's face get knocked off. But, you know, he got that beautiful submission, and he can add that to his belt. You know, watch out, heavyweight division. Derek Lewis is scary everywhere.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, it comes in handy. like I say, you go to Roy Nelson is one of the best jiu-jitsu practitioners in heavyweight division. Never goes to the ground. So he never uses it. To see a guy like, you know, Derek Lewis, you know, show all the skills and well-rounded skills that he trains for is great. He's going to need them. Because sooner or later, you're going to get a Fabricio Verdum. You're going to get a Cain Velasquez. And one-punch knockout power is great, and you can probably get him out of here with that. We've seen that with Verdum. But it's also great to be able to go 5 rounds with these guys. Going 5 with Kane isn't easy. Going to the ground with Verdum is no happy time. So you might as well practice this now.
All right, guys. Before we end, I want to touch on one last thing. Obviously, next week is UFC on Fox 22. So we will be there. Making a special guest appearance. So,
yes, sir.
I'm, for whatever reason, I was hearing some feedback. Did you guys hear that, or is it just me? It's just me,
yeah,
right?
I heard. I think maybe it's on Kel's end. Okay, just roll on.
Sorry. Sorry, I'm late, guys.
Sorry, I'm late. I just don't give a fuck.
All right, guys. So before we get out of here, first and foremost, let's thank Kel, who, by the way, Kel, I can talk to you for 5 hours. I am not joking. So
follow
Kel. No, honestly, you're that fantastic. And what's even better is, sure, you have mic skills, but you're a good guy. I mean, you know, when you're a good person, it just comes across. So you're a good person. So we follow Kel at KELDANSBY. Follow Kel at Kel Dansby, of course, journalist for Black Sports Online and half of the tag team champions, The Corner, which we will be going in a cage match, Proteus and I versus Andreas. And if you ever see that guy's huge, versus Kel. So we'll go there and battle it out. Guys, before we close, by the way, thank you, Kel, for hanging in there with us. I know we went OT, so thank you. Before we go, do you have a song of the week? I know how much of a music guy you are. Do you have a song of the week, something that you think that that someone has slept on, or whether it's old or new, it doesn't make a difference?
Wow. It's hard to pick one song, but I would say give Childish Gambino's new album a listen. It's like super funky, like 70s, 80s style, psychedelic, like funkadelic music. It's not like his hip-hop stuff beforehand. It's different, refreshing. It reminds me kind of the Love Below by Andre 3000, where a hip-hop guy goes completely off the board. So Childish Gambino, new album. Make sure you guys check that out.
Nice. All right. Sweet. Proteus, what say you?
Yes, sir. Song of the week. Song of the week has definitely got to be, I'm going back to Coheed and Cambria again, you know, my favorite band. Fangs of the Fox. Every time I'm a little down, that song just saves me. And so that'll be my song of the week.
I got to tell you one that I had a different song picked out, and believe it or not, Kel is the one that brought me to this, because he said how hip hop in the early 2000s wasn't very good. Well, shout out to Nas. So Nas is One Mic from Stillmatic. That was a great song, guys. Really underrated. So my Twitter follow of the week, because you know me, I like the ladies, Ashley Yoder. Follow Ashley Yoder at Ashley Yoder MMA. Probably the best tan in MMA. Proteus, do you have a Twitter follow of the week?
Absolutely, I do. I'm gonna give my boy Matthew Wells a little love at Mr. M. Wells Harp. He was really nice to me at the MMA meetup. I sat, like I was saying earlier on, sat with him and Jim most of the night. Great dude. Looks pretty good getting off the bus too, guys. I'm not gonna lie.
And of course, the one and only Kel Dansby. Kel, do you have a Twitter follow of the week?
Yes, I'll say it again. Follow Derek Lewis, Black Beast. He just won. Great Twitter follow. Very funny during all these events when he's not fighting. Make sure you follow him. I believe it's Black Beast MMA on Twitter.
Yeah, that guy's hilarious. His Instagram, I mean, that guy's really funny. Kel, hopefully you'll join us again. I'm a big fan. I'm not joking. So, again, Kel Dansby from the Corner Podcast with Andreas Hale. And, again, follow Kel at DANSBY. Follow Proteus at PROADOS. Follow me at I'm DJ Tony. Follow us at Another MMA Cast. Gentlemen, it's always great to see you guys. We'll see you guys next week from UFC on Fox 22 in the Bay Area. Actually, not in the Bay Area, Sacramento. Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure. And like that,
hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.